Welcome back to the deep dive. I was on my couch last night, just doing that mindless scroll, we all know it, swiping through Instagram, looking at, thousands of images. And it really hit me that I have more documentation of my life than any human who lived 100 years ago could have even dreamed of. I mean, I have 10,000 photos right here in my pocket.
It's the modern paradox, isn't it? We are drowning in content, but we are starving for context.
Starving for context, that's it.
We have so much proof that we existed, but very little evidence of who we actually were.
That is exactly the tension we're going to unpack today. Mm-hmm. We're looking at a fascinating stack of source material here that outlines a philosophy called fit fashion.
Right.
But, and I want to put a big disclaimer up front, we are not talking about clothes. And we aren't really even talking about a photography session the way most people think about it.
No, not at all. We're not getting into lighting setups or, you know, how to smile for the camera. We're looking at what these sources call legacy work.
Legacy work.
It's a whole philosophical framework that argues there's this massive difference between taking a photo to display a moment, which is what we all do on social media.
All day long.
Versus creating a physical object to preserve a season of life.
Preserving a season.
Mm-hmm.
I circled that phrase like three times in the prep notes.
Yeah.
Because it feels so different from capturing a moment.
It's a completely different metric. And today we're really going to dig into the psychology behind two very specific physical formats the text mentions. The triptych and the Mies book.
Okay.
Our mission is to understand how these objects serve as what the source calls a personal archive of embodiment.
Archive of embodiment. Okay, that sounds heavy. Let's translate that before we go any further.
Sure. Embodiment is really just the academic way of saying living inside your body.
Right.
It's not just how you look, the aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's the history of your physical self, how you moved, how you felt, the strength you built up.
So an archive of embodiment is like, here is the proof that I occupied this space.
Exactly. And I treated this vessel with respect.
Which brings us to the audience the sources identify.
Hmm.
This isn't for everyone. It specifically says this is for the disciplined woman.
Right. And that distinction really matters. If you're someone who has dedicated years to your career or your fitness or, you know, your personal growth, you get that most of the work is invisible.
Oh, completely. The discipline happens in the dark.
It's the 5 a.m. alarm clock.
It's the meal prep on Sunday when you would much rather be watching TV.
Exactly. So for that person, just a standard pretty picture can feel insufficient. It feels surface level.
It does.
The fit fashion philosophy basically argues that if the work was rigorous, the documentation should be rigorous too. It shouldn't just be decor.
Okay, let's pull on that thread, decor versus documentation.
Hmm.
The sources draw a really sharp line there. And I think most of us, if we're being honest, treat photos as decor.
We absolutely do. We treat them like trophies. Think about the standard photos people hang on their walls.
The graduation photo. The wedding photo.
The photo at the finish line of the marathon where you're holding the medal.
The big day photos, yeah.
Correct. Now, psychologically, you have to ask yourself, what is the function of that image? The source argues that the internal dialogue there is usually, look how I looked, or look what I achieved.
It's a status signal.
It is. It's for anyone who enters the room.
It's kind of like saying, I peaked here.
Well, hopefully not peaked, but it captures a static, like, millisecond of victory. It says, I did this thing.
Right.
But the approach we're looking at today completely flips that internal dialogue. It shifts from, look how I looked, to, this is who I was becoming.
Who I was becoming. That's interesting because it implies the story isn't over.
Exactly. It implies movement, a continuum. The focus isn't on a static victory. It's on creating continuity over time.
It's about marking a season of discipline.
And acknowledging that the discipline itself is the point, not just the final result.
And for a high achiever, that has to resonate. Because the work is never really done. You don't hit a fitness goal and then just, you know, stop moving forever. You evolve.
Right. If you only document the finish lines, you miss the actual life. You miss the grit. This approach is about owning the story of the work itself.
It prioritizes memory over vanity. I think that's a crucial distinction.
It is.
Vanity is, do I look good? Memory is, was this true?
Precisely. And the source material makes a really profound point here. It says discipline is fleeting if it isn't documented. We think we'll remember how hard we worked.
We won't.
We think we'll remember exactly how strong we felt at 35 or 40, but we don't.
Memory is so slippery. We rewrite our own history all the time.
We do. We soften all the edges. We forget the intensity. These objects are meant to be an anchor. They say, I was here. I did this. This is the woman who showed up.
Okay, so if we accept that premise, that we need to document the process, the identity, not just the smile, then the medium has to change, right?
It has to.
You can't just slap a 4x6 print in a plastic frame and call it a legacy.
No, the material has to match the message. If the message is, this is permanent and important, the medium can't be disposable. Which brings us to the first big format the sources break down, the triptych.
Now, triptych is an art world term.
Yeah.
It's usually like three panels hinged together like an altarpiece. But here, we're talking about a wall display.
Right, a three-image series. And the sources are very, very adamant about this. A triptych is not just three random photos you hang next to each other because you couldn't pick a favorite.
It's not a collage.
It is a sequence. The triptych is designed to be read, usually from left to right. It is a conversation between images.
So why three? Is there something specific about the number three in this context?
Oh, there's a lot of cognitive psychology at play with the rule of three. Think about how we consume images on a screen.
Singular, rapid, swipe, swipe, swipe.
Exactly. We process a single image in a fraction of a second, and then we just discard it. It's the feed mentality. We devour it and move on. But when you present three images together that are visually linked, say a close-up, a full body shot, and then a detail, it breaks that pattern. It forces the brain to just stop.
It slows you down.
It has to. You have to scan, you have to compare, you have to look for the relationship between image A, image B, and image C. It forces contemplation.
And it frames the body not as a performance, like, hey, look at me smile, but as form.
Yes, as form. It becomes structural. You start looking at the lines, the muscle, the geometry of the person.
Speaking of structural, the text really highlights the material choice here.
Yeah.
Metal prints. Now, I've seen metal prints. They're very high gloss, very modern. But why is that specific material so essential to the philosophy? Why not a nice canvas?
It all comes back to that difference between archive and sentiment.
Right.
Paper, canvas, those are organic materials.
Right. They have a softness. They feel warm.
But they also fade. They feel susceptible to time. Metal is inorganic. It's cold, durable, permanent. The sources describe the aesthetic of metal as architectural, not sentimental.
Architectural. Not sentimental. That stops me in my tracks because usually when we take portraits, we are trying to be sentimental. We want to feel warm and fuzzy.
But ask yourself, does the disciplined woman want to feel warm and fuzzy about her grind?
No.
Or does she want to feel solid?
She wants to feel solid. She wants to see the strength.
Exactly. The metal print changes how the object lives in the room. A sentimental photo triggers nostalgia. It's that little dopamine hit of, remember that vacation.
Mm.
But an architectural piece, a large-scale metal triptych that is presence on display, it changes the energy of the space.
It does.
The text says it doesn't shout. It holds space. It acts as a quiet witness to consistency.
I love that.
When you walk into a room and you see that, it anchors the present moment. The message isn't, look at me. The message is, this season of discipline mattered enough to live on my walls.
I like the idea of it being a standard setter.
Mm-hmm.
If I wake up and walk out for my coffee and the first thing I see is some generic print from IKEA, that's just visual noise. It's filler.
It's neutral.
But if I walk out and see a stark, powerful representation of my own capability, that's a feedback loop.
It reminds you of who you are. It substantiates the effort. You put the work in, you created the artifact, and now the artifact reminds you to keep putting the work in.
So the triptych is the public face, the architectural element. But the sources spend even more time on the second format, which I found, honestly, more radical in its thinking, the Muse book.
The Muse book is fascinating because it requires us to completely unlearn what we think a photo album is.
Yeah, my brain immediately goes to those sticky pages, plastic sleeves, maybe some handwritten dates in the margins.
Or the auto-generated photo book from your phone that you never actually look at.
Right.
We have to scrap that image. The comparison the sources use is to fashion house books. Think of those massive 10-pound coffee table books from Vogue or Chanel or Tom Ford.
The ones that are basically pieces of furniture.
Yeah.
They cost a fortune and they just sit there looking important.
Yes. But why do fashion houses publish those? They aren't catalogs. They're not trying to sell you a dress from 1995.
No, they're defining a legacy. They're saying this was the era of Tom Ford.
Exactly. They are documenting eras. They capture the mood, the aesthetic of a specific time in history. The Muse book applies that exact same editorial rigor to a private, personal life.
So instead of documenting the era of Gucci, it's documenting the era of you.
Correct. And the structural brilliance here, and this is the part that I think is so smart psychologically, is that it is designed as a series. The text is so specific about this.
Okay.
The first session is not the best session. It isn't the ultimate session. It is simply volume one.
That concept, volume one, is such a relief because usually if you book a photo shoot, the pressure is crushing.
Oh, it's a pass-fail test.
You think, I have to be perfect. I have to be at my absolute lowest weight. My hair has to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because the assumption is, I am only doing this one time.
Right. This is it. This is the only proof I'll ever have. But if you frame it as volume one, all that pressure just evaporates. Volume one implies there will be a volume two. It implies a volume three. It suggests that you are a library being built over time, not a single billboard.
It reframes imperfection as just plot.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's just plot. If you're writing a biography, chapter one doesn't have to resolve the whole story.
No, it just has to set the scene.
Right. And if you treat your body and your life like a muse book, suddenly you aren't failing because you aren't finished yet. You're just in the middle of a volume.
This changes the relationship with aging too, doesn't it?
Profoundly. Think about a wedding album. That captures one day, usually when you're young. When you look at that album 20 years later, often the feeling is pure nostalgia. We were so young, we were so thin. There can be a tinge of sadness, of loss.
I wish I could go back.
Exactly. But the muse book concept captures identity over time. It documents a specific chapter, and here's the phrase from the text I love, how the woman inhabited her body during that season.
Inhabited her body.
Mm.
That brings us right back to embodiment.
It does. It's not just about what she looked like. It's about the energy she carried. Was this a season of building strength, a season of recovery, a season of motherhood, or intense professional focus? The book holds that narrative nuance.
It allows for different versions of yourself to exist. You aren't trying to compete with your 20-year-old self. You're simply archiving your 40-year-old self.
And giving her the exact same respect.
It's funny. We're so used to digital archives now. I have thousands of photos, but they feel like clutter. They're just data.
They are clutter, and clutter creates anxiety. A muse book is curation. It's taking the chaos of life, all those thousands of moments, and organizing them into a coherent narrative. That's the act that turns it into art.
Okay, so let's look at the synthesis here. Yeah. We had the triptych, metal, architectural, public, hanging on the wall, and then the muse book, editorial, serial, intimate, sitting on the table. The sources suggest the real magic happens when a client chooses both.
This is where the whole concept of the personal archive really clicks into place. It's a synthesis of space and time.
Break that down for me. Space and time.
Okay. So the triptych lives in the environment. It claims space. It anchors the now.
The present.
It anchors the present. It acts as that daily reminder of your standard. It's the totem.
Yes.
But the muse book, that lives in the archive. Maybe it's on a shelf or a specific table. You don't look at it every time you walk by. You have to choose to open it.
It claims time.
It claims time. It preserves the journey and the history.
So one anchors your identity in your home, and the other anchors your history in a library.
Together, they transform the entire experience from just buying photos to building that personal archive of embodiment.
This leads us right to the definition of legacy. In the source text, which I thought was really unique. It says, legacy is not about ego. It is a tool for the future self.
This was the biggest takeaway for me. We tend to think of legacy as something we leave for others. Here's what I did. Remember me when I'm gone.
Right.
But this frames legacy as a gift you give to your future self.
How is it a tool, though?
Imagine yourself 20, 30 years from now. You open volume one of your muse book. You look at that metal triptych that's been on your wall for decades. If those were just glamour shots, you might feel that pang of vanity we talked about.
Right. I was hot then.
But because this is legacy work focused on discipline and embodiment, the future self looks back and sees something else entirely. They recognize the character behind the image. They say,
right.
I treated myself with respect. I worked hard. I honored the vessel I was in.
It validates the life lived. Not just the genetics you have.
Exactly. It becomes a source of strength for the future. You look back and say, I have been strong before. I can be strong again. Or even just, I lived this life with intention.
It's almost like writing a letter to your future self, but you're writing it with your body.
That is a chillingly good way to put it. It's physical proof of your own history. And for the disciplined woman, that is invaluable. Because let's be honest, discipline is hard. And it's mostly invisible.
No one sees the restraint at the dinner party. No one sees the extra rep when you wanted to quit.
Most of that happens completely in the dark. But these objects, they make that invisible discipline visible. They say, this happened, it mattered, and we are keeping it.
You know, it strikes me that this is really an act of resistance against the disposable culture we live in. Everything is fleeting.
Everything.
Trends change every week. We post a photo, it gets likes for 24 hours, and then it's buried forever.
Yeah.
This is the antithesis of that.
It is. It's refusing to let your own life be disposable. It's refusing to let your hard work just dissolve into the digital ether. It's saying, my life is not content. My life is history.
And that brings us back to that word season. The text talks about marking a season. Why is that terminology so important?
Because seasons end. And that's okay. We fight against that reality so hard. We want to be in the peak summer of our lives forever.
Mm.
But you might be in a season of peak athletic performance right now. You won't be in that season forever. You might move into a season of motherhood or a season of career building or a season of rest.
And if you don't preserve the season you're in, once it's gone.
It's gone. It just blurs. These objects, the metal prints, the editorial albums, they pin the season down like a butterfly in a case. They preserve the truth of it so you can move on to the next one without the fear of losing the past.
That leads to a really important psychological distinction the source makes right at the end. It says these products are designed to outlast moments and that they are not about nostalgia, but about recognition.
That word recognition is so vital. Nostalgia is often passive. It's looking back and feeling a bit wistful. Recognition is active. It is about respect. I see that. I honor that.
Yes.
When you look at a legacy piece, you shouldn't feel sad that time has passed. You should feel proud that the time was used well.
That is a beautiful place to land. It's not about clinging to the past, but honoring it so you can move forward.
Precisely. It allows you to let go of that season in a way because you know it's safely stored. You don't have to carry it all in your head anymore. The muse book carries it for you. The triptych holds the space for you.
And you are free to move on to the next volume.
You're free to become who you are becoming next.
Exactly. This has been such a fascinating look at how we interact with our own images. It really challenges the scrolling culture we all live in.
It asks us to slow down, to value quality over quantity, and to value our own history enough to give it a physical form.
So here's the final thought from the source material that I want to leave you with today. It's a provocation, really.
Trends fade, bodies change, but identity, when preserved with intention, becomes legacy.
That's the mission. Not just to exist, but to preserve the intention behind the existence.
And that is worth more than any number of likes on a screen.
So, listener, the question for you today is simple. What season are you in right now? Is it a season of building, a season of rest, a season of transformation? And more importantly, how are you going to preserve it? Because if you don't, it might just slip away.
Don't let it just be a memory. Make it a legacy.
Thanks for diving in with us. We'll see you in the next volume.
Take care.